we're running around here in the Middle East and we're talking to, you know, oil-rich countries that have tons of wealth that are exploring and looking into this stuff. FOMO is intensifying, and I think we are getting very close to a lot of noise within this marketplace. If Bitcoin increases, that gives us more capacity to issue our perpetual preferred equity. And if we issue more perpetual preferred equity, we're buying more Bitcoin with it. We're in a digital gold rush. Well, over the next 4 to 8 years, we think institutional adoption increases drastically. We think sovereign adoption increases drastically. We think digital credit starts to permeate throughout the rest of the market. So because of those dynamics, the macro environment, we see probably the next 4 to 8 years between a 30 to 50% compound annual growth rate for Bitcoin. Banks and pensions and insurance companies will not be able to not hold these things.
Jeff Walton, you're back, man.
What's
that? Third time on the show.
Third time.
You're one of the only people that's been on the show more than once who wasn't on the previous show.
That's right. We're moving fast here.
You've been blowing up.
Coming up.
So we've only got like 45 minutes. So we're going to have to get right into it.
Speed run.
A treasury company's doomed, man. We're in paper Bitcoin winter.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, paper Bitcoin winter.
That's the first question.
What's that?
Are treasury companies doomed?
Are they doomed?
Yeah, this has been a tough time for them. There's prices going down, lots of them trading below 1XM NAV. Is the playbook that most treasury companies have implemented, strategy aside,
yeah,
is that getting tired?
I think that's a good question. The initial playbook was put Bitcoin on your balance sheet, sell equity, buy more Bitcoin. And that's a, you know, one-shot model. And that model has evolved. And if that was your only, you know, trick, not even a trick, I would say if that was your only tool, that you need other tools in your toolkit now, mm-hmm. right? And so whether that be operating business or, you know, running a digital credit model or earning yield on your Bitcoin in different ways in the market, and those ways are evolving. So I don't think the treasury model isn't dead, right? You take a step back and you look at the companies that have adopted Bitcoin and put Bitcoin on the balance sheet. And historically, they were zombie companies. Mm-hmm. They were dead to begin with. This was a, you know, last ditch effort to help the company survive into the future.
Yeah.
And, you know, putting Bitcoin on your balance sheet helps you survive into the future, because with Bitcoin as capital, you can do things with it, just like you could with real estate, right? If you hold real estate, you can earn a yield on it. And now if you hold Bitcoin, you can earn a yield on it. And just being here running around this conference, there are several ways that people are generating yield on Bitcoin assets. And those are evolving very quickly. I mean, just the last few minutes, I was talking with Hunter Albright at Salt.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Salt provides Bitcoin-backed lending products. Okay, Bitcoin-backed lending products. So, you know, you as a personal holder, if you wanted to monetize your Bitcoin, you can go post some Bitcoin as collateral and get fiat dollars to go use them however you want to. Now, but there's difficult terms. You have a margin call. If the price of Bitcoin drops 50%, you've got to post more collateral. And that's a risk that you may have to be willing to take.
Yep.
They're offering a new product called Salt Shield. And Salt Shield is effectively insurance on the margin call, where they will, if you can, you can buy this little add-on product that effectively gives you more capacity in the event that you got close to a margin call. You effectively borrow more Bitcoin so you don't get margin called.
Borrow more Bitcoin against what Bitcoin?
Against your loan transaction.
So even if your loan is getting to the point where the loan to value needs topping up to make sure you're not margin called. Like, mm-hmm. where, so how does it get
you buy it, you buy it up front.
I see.
You buy it up front. It's like an insurance policy, just like, so.
And is it the same dynamics of the second loan essentially as the first? Is it the same?
No, different dynamics. I've got to look more into it. But what the interesting part is, the Salt lending is taking capacity from corporations that hold Bitcoin on their balance sheet. And that Bitcoin can be held in an escrow account with their existing custodian, and it can be held there within that transaction. And that loan is over collateralized. So you think about the risk of the Bitcoin collateral that's been posted, and it's a relatively de-risked product because the underlying loan is over-collateralized. So the real question is, if there is a margin call, whose dollar loss comes first? And it's probably the person that's taking out the loan takes the loss first. But that's just one example of innovation that's happening in the space. There are hundreds. Mm-hmm. There are hundreds of examples that are happening in the space. So we're early days, and these treasury companies can always wait. They have the luxury of time most of the time. And if the price of Bitcoin goes higher, now they have more capital, and they can start, maybe that if you get more capital, that gets you into a different echelon where you can run different strategies or access different yield opportunities. So for us, for example, at our company Strive, we issued $200 million of perpetual preferred equity. And in order to access the perpetual preferred equity market, you kind of need about 5,000 Bitcoin, 5,000, 6,000 Bitcoin, and need to issue about $150 to $200 million of this product in order for it to be attractive to that marketplace. So there's as you get higher up in scale, there are more opportunities that open up to you.
Mm-hmm. And so this is really all of these treasury companies, like this has always been, I think, pretty obvious to anyone watching that they're going to become some kind of Bitcoin bank. Do you think that is a sort of transition that will happen in the next 3 or 4 years, or is that a longer playbook?
Can you repeat the question?
So with strategy particularly, it was always mm-hmm. obvious they were going to become some kind of Bitcoin financial service,
Bank, whatever you want to call it.
Mm-hmm. Do you think any treasury company from here that's going to survive at good scale is probably going to do the same thing and become either a lender or...
Not necessarily. They don't have to be. It gives you power to operate, mm-hmm. the power to continue to operate into the future. You don't have to be a bank, right? You look at a company like 21 or that just came out. They're focusing primarily on the operating business and, you know, Bitcoin infrastructure. So having the Bitcoin on their balance sheet gives them access to dollars that they can utilize in their operating business. So the real question then becomes for 21, does that use of those dollars, is that better off in the operating business? Like if Bitcoin's your hurdle rate, would you rather deploy those dollars into an operating business or buying more Bitcoin?
Yeah, and that's the key question.
Right.
Because I don't pay loads of attention to treasury companies, apart from when I do shows on them, I talk to people like you. But from the outside looking in, it doesn't seem like any of the underlying businesses are actually very important. Like that's not why strategy's gone up in price a load. That's not why they've got to 650,000 Bitcoin or wherever they're at now. Mm-hmm. Like, do you think that's the wrong way to approach this in terms of looking at an operating business instead of just more like pure play treasury?
Yeah, like I think there's just room for so many different types of companies. I mean, our future and our world is moving significantly more digital, and we don't know exactly what the future of Bitcoin-backed finance looks like or even what these companies can potentially do in the future. So there's just optionality mm-hmm. by having Bitcoin on your balance sheet. It saves you, so you have the ability to operate into the future.
This episode is brought to you by AnchorWatch. The thing that keeps me up at night is the idea of a critical error with my Bitcoin cold storage. And this is where AnchorWatch comes in. With AnchorWatch, your Bitcoin is insured with your own A+ rated Lloyd's of London insurance policy, and all Bitcoin is held in their time-locked multi-sig vaults. So you have the peace of mind knowing your Bitcoin is insured while not giving up custody. So whether you're worried about inheritance planning, rent tax, natural disasters, or just your own silly mistakes, you're protected by AnchorWatch. Rates for fully insured custody start as low as 0.55% and are available for individual and commercial customers located in the US. Speak to AnchorWatch for a quote, and for more details about your security options and coverage, visit anchorwatch.com today. That is anchorwatch.com. What Bitcoin Did is brought to you by the massive legends Iron, the largest NASDAQ-listed Bitcoin miner using 100% renewable energy. Iron are not just powering the Bitcoin network, they're also providing cutting-edge computing resources for AI, all backed by renewable energy. We've been working with their founders, Dan and Will, for quite some time now and have been really impressed with their values, especially their commitment to local communities and sustainable computing power. So whether you're interested in mining Bitcoin or harnessing AI compute power, Iron is setting the standard. Visit iron.com to learn more, which is iren.com. With fiat money constantly debasing, wealth preservation isn't optional. That's why I recommend Swan Bitcoin, a team of dedicated Bitcoiners who work with families and businesses to build and secure generational wealth with Bitcoin. Strong relationships with clients are at the center of everything Swan does. A dedicated Swan Private Wealth representative, which is a real person that you can text and call, will help you build a Bitcoin wealth strategy using Swan's comprehensive platform of Bitcoin services, including tax-advantaged retirement accounts, advanced Bitcoin cold storage using collaborative self-custody, inheritance planning with both trust and entity accounts, tax loss harvesting, asset-backed loans, and more. Swan have helped over 100,000 clients since 2020, and if you're serious about acquiring and securing Bitcoin, I recommend Swan. Meet the team at swan.com/WBD, which is swan.com/WBD. So I get what you're saying, like there's room for people to experiment here because we don't know yet. This is still very early days. But there's probably not room for there's not room for 100 big treasury companies. Like that's going to be like a finite space of winners, I think.
Yeah, probably.
And I don't know what the kind of threshold for that is. We've not even talked about you joining Strive since we last spoke. Let's start there. So how big is Strive now?
Yeah, Strive, we have 7,525 Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. And so just, I think it's about $650 million, something like that. And we're pretty sizable. I think we're 14th largest company that holds Bitcoin on the balance sheet. And we have the Semler transaction. We went through the process of acquiring Semler. So once that transaction closes, I think we'll be top 10 publicly traded companies that hold Bitcoin on the balance sheet. And that gives us more ability to grow and run the digital asset treasury strategy into the future. So I would argue that there's going to be room for different types of strategies here. 100 maybe more. If you look at the existing structure of the world, there are 5,000 banks. Mm-hmm. There are 5,000 insurance companies. There are 5,000 credit unions. And they all offer the exact same product.
Yep.
Right? So how do you differentiate? They all operate in different places, different locations, offer different risk return metrics, have different pricing. And I think that's a world in which we're moving. Obviously, you're going to have Strategy, which is the biggest.
Yeah.
And their lead is just getting even larger every day, right? They bought 10,000 Bitcoin last week.
Yeah, insane.
Right? They bought a Strive last week worth of Bitcoin. And we've been working really hard, right? Damn. But there's room to innovate within that. And you look at a company like Strategy, they're so large and the responsibility that they have within the marketplace is they have to be incredibly transparent and simple. Mm-hmm. If they start doing things beyond what they're doing and that are difficult to quantify and difficult to understand, the story starts to get muddied very quickly. So I wouldn't necessarily look to them to be a leader they are a leader in the perpetual preferred equity that their company is absolutely killing it. But, the smaller companies may have room to innovate in these little smaller niche areas of capital markets.
So kind of take higher risk that it wouldn't be worth strategy taking.
Right. Even for example, we went through the process to acquire Semler. Mm-hmm. That's something that Strategy has been very adamant that they're not going to do any M&A activity.
Yeah.
Because there's tail risk associated with it. But you know, a company like us, if we want to scale, if we want to issue a perpetual preferred equity, bringing in a company like Semler, where we're able to double our Bitcoin stack and then issue perpetual preferred equity against that starts to look very attractive.
Yeah. And because you're essentially, I don't know what the MNAV is, but it's below one for Semler, I believe. So you're buying Bitcoin at a discount while doing that.
Yeah, effectively. So it was an all-stock transaction. The headline number looked horrible. It looked like we were buying Semler at $90 a share because our stock price at the time was trading at $4 and Semler's was trading at like 1 MNAV or 0.9 MNAV, something like that. So we didn't have any cash that went out the door in that transaction. So we effectively purchased Semler using the premium that existed in our stock.
I see.
If that makes sense.
Yeah,
so we effectively got Bitcoin at a discount. You could think of it that way.
And so that's kind of the point I was trying to get to before, where what is the market right now? Like how many can it really sustain as those sort of top treasury companies? I think you can forget about the long tail. There's going to be people that try unique things in different markets that are smaller scale. They might work, but they're not going to ever end up being like a strategy size thing.
Yeah.
So do you think of the, say, top 20 treasury companies, maybe even top 50, we're going to see continued acquisitions?
Yeah, I think probably in the future. Well, I think one thing I want to challenge here is that just because your stock is trading below 1 mNAV doesn't mean your company is like a failure. The company still holds Bitcoins. So everybody that works at the company, like they could liquidate the company today and it would be worth one.
Yeah. But the challenge though, I see, and I could be wrong here. I say, I don't spend like all my time thinking about this, is like how, once it's below 1x mNAV, especially for a sustained period of time, how do you ever get it back? Because like it seems like you're going to have to either buy back shares, which you're going to have to raise debt to do, or sell Bitcoin to do. Does it become like a death spiral once it goes below 1x for a long time?
Yeah, I guess it depends on the productivity of the humans that work at the company.
Yeah.
Like the humans that work at the company, what business can you do? Mm-hmm. You know, can you go, make phone calls and leverage your Bitcoin in different ways? Can you go park it at Coinbase and earn 5% yield on it? Can you go, you know, be a capacity provider for Salt Shield, mm-hmm. right? Like there's things that you can do. You go to the conferences and look at all of the opportunities out there, right? You can deploy that capital in different ways. So the equity valuations are a snapshot at a point in time. I don't think it's death spiral because it's just capital, mm-hmm. right? If you're trading below 1 mNAV, you still have the money.
Yeah.
Right. There are one thing that I really like to do is compare these companies to the rest of the world. And you can go compare a lot of these smaller companies that are trading under 1 mNAV, and you look at their balance sheets and go compare it to an equivalent sized market cap company in the rest of the equity market. And that equivalent size company in the rest of the equity market probably has a balance sheet that's 1/16 of the size, right? And they're in more hot water than the company that actually has the money on the balance sheet. So to the extent that they can wait or, you know, get out in the market and operate, I think they're going to be okay, like most of them. But to your point, there's likely going to be future M&A within the market for companies that are just kind of dead in the water. Mm-hmm. Maybe they're too small, they can't get scale, they don't want to take on the risk of the opportunities. Maybe the board of directors is just tired and they want to be out of there. Maybe the operating business doesn't work very much anymore. Like they're getting taken over by AI. Even at that point, your business is an attractive M&A target.
because the operators of the business aren't attractive to bring on board.
Just the Bitcoin. Mm. Like think about Semler if they didn't have the Bitcoin.
Yeah. No one's buying that company.
No, like they just recently they lost some of their largest customers and the revenue shrunk significantly.
Because they had a lawsuit or something.
Yeah, there's a lawsuit and it was a company that was going through challenges. Mm-hmm. Okay, so if that would have happened and they didn't have the Bitcoin on the balance sheet, Now the company's worthless.
Yeah.
Right. Like it's worth the IP. And what's the IP worth? Well, the IP is worth whatever somebody's willing to pay for it, which might be a dollar. Mm-hmm. Right. So that construction is everywhere within these treasury companies. The Bitcoin is worth something. And you've got two options. If you're the company that's being acquired, you have two options. You can liquidate all the Bitcoin and pay out all of the equity, or you can look at being an acquisition target for any of these other companies and, you know, get in conversations with them and say, hey, like I'm looking to be acquired, and then you can negotiate terms. If you don't like the terms, just liquidate the Bitcoin and pay out all the equity. So there's optionality within those just by having that Bitcoin.
Yeah. I'm not trying to give you a hard time here at all.
No,
These are
good questions. And it's something that a lot of people are trying to figure out. And there's been a lot of hatred in the market about these treasury companies. A lot of people, YOLOing, and they've been volatile, right? Yeah. These companies have been the volatility absorbers in the Bitcoin market, right? As we've been in this, you know, mini bear market here on the price of Bitcoin dropping 30%. Mm-hmm. It's like where does all the excess liquidity come from? It comes out of the treasury companies. You've seen it with Strategy. I mean, Strategy's gone from a $120 billion company to $50 billion company. Like that's a significant amount of liquidity that's left the market. Yet the company's still trading $3 billion a day. Like the company's still attractive to people that are trading the stock and holding the stock. So yeah, it's an interesting dynamic.
Yeah. And like I have no problem with the treasury company. Like I think companies going out there, buying loads of Bitcoin, putting on the balance sheet, that's cool. And like, I love that there's someone out there buying a load of Bitcoin. And I think if I was running a you know, big corporation, I would want Bitcoin on the balance sheet. So it's none of that is like my issue. The only place I have a slight issue is the people who are being like, not, oh, I don't know the right word. It's definitely not tricked, but they're being like incentivized to go and chase greater volatility in treasury companies because Bitcoin's been pretty flat over the last year. And like, I think selling Bitcoin to buy a treasury company is a very risky take. It's essentially the same.
I think that's a bad idea.
Yeah. It's essentially the same as being like, I'm going to sell Bitcoin now at 90,000 to buy back at 80,000. It's the same idea. And I think that generally doesn't play out well for people. Yeah. I would also
challenge that. I think you may step back and look at your life. There are bad entry points on all of these things. It's becoming very obvious and very clear. There are bad entry points. I mean, I personally went in very deep to MicroStrategy at the time in November of 22. Thought that was a great entry. It was like, this company's solvent, you know, and everybody thinks they're dead. And I was, you know, buying tail options in early 2023. So I thought that was a very good entry point. And, you know, in November, when the stock was trading at $540, was probably a bad entry point. And it was trading at 4.5x MNAV. But you look at the fundamentals of the company, like the company has literally never been stronger today. Mm-hmm. When the company was trading at $540, they had 250,000 Bitcoin and zero preferred equity. Now the company is trading at $180 and they got 660,000 Bitcoin and 5 perpetual preferred equities. Which one's better? It's like the one that's $180, the one's 500. If you liked it at 540, it looks like a screaming deal here.
Yeah, no, so I totally agree with that. And again, this is where it gets hard because like comparing strategy to some of the other ones is... Yeah. Like they're just two different worlds.
Because
you can like at the same time as I totally agree with what you're saying, you can look at something like NACA and it's like everyone's got completely wrecked. And maybe where it is right now is not a bad buy. I don't know. Like, but the point is like it's trading. Yeah. And like I always try and tell people not to trade, and it's no different with treasury companies as it is with Bitcoin.
Yeah.
But like as like the trap pools of institutional capital, like I think you serve like a really good market there. So it's not like I'm trying to give you too hard a time. And I do think that there's
let's dive into this a little bit, because if you're I'm not recommending anybody sell Bitcoin to do any of this stuff, but you've seen large OGs do this, right? People that have had, you know, thousands of Bitcoin.
I mean, Adam Back's funded pretty much every treasury company.
Right, you look at Adam Back, he's like, well, this is actually a really appealing opportunity if I could do this in a tax-efficient way. If you could do this in a tax-efficient way and start getting into this market, you start to look at, you know, if you've got so many Bitcoin you don't know what to do with, like, you might want to have some exposure here if you're underweight in some of these deals.
Yeah.
Like, maybe that makes sense. But if you're like, if you've got, you know, 2 Bitcoin, probably doesn't make sense to sell your 2 Bitcoin and then buy. Like, it probably makes sense to just work more.
Yeah.
And exactly. buy additional exposure when you want it. And it's just, it's the like high volatility, the amplified part of your portfolio. That's probably more.
Yeah. And there's nothing more risk-free than owning self-custody Bitcoin.
Right.
But Adam Back is obviously an incredible person, but he's also like, he's always been a trader. Like he loves trading Bitcoin.
That's true.
Like,
that's part of his
shtick. Do you think there's kind of a dynamic going on now where as Bitcoin price is dropping, the market is almost testing a lot of these treasury companies to be, because like MicroStrategy went through this in 2021 or 22, whenever it was, where like it traded at a discount. It's like, let's see who's operational team are like on it, who's going to survive this, who's going to position themselves really well. Do you think we're going through a bit of a stress test in that market?
A little bit. I mean, you try to compare it to 2022 and MicroStrategy had less assets than they did debt on the balance sheet at that time. Now you look at the company right now and they have 12% leverage.
Yeah.
It's like completely different. Now, some of the other smaller companies, they're starting to get tested a little bit. You've seen a couple margin calls. You saw a company like Saquon's. They sold some Bitcoin to reduce the leverage from the convertible bond on the balance sheet. Yeah, that might have been a good idea. But realistically, I think what we've seen kind of going on with Bitcoin probably has more to do with just the credit environment in the broader business macro ecosystem, right? We've got interest rates coming down in a couple of days, potentially in the US, and a lot of incentive for the economy to be roaring in 2026, right? You've got Donald Trump. You've got elections in November of 2026, mm-hmm. midterms.
He's going to want the economy hot.
You want the you want everybody fired up. Yeah. You just want everybody like, yes, I want more of this, right? Give me more of this. So there's every incentive for the economy to be rip-roaring in 2026 and potentially replacing Jerome Powell and the Fed with somebody that's, you know, wants easy money,
yeah.
and lower interest rates and the business to be booming. So I think that the four-year cycle is probably broken, and you've got a lot of people that have been selling because of, you know, four-year cycle, this is the top. And but we really haven't experienced a euphoric
definitely not
bull run.
No.
And we haven't experienced euphoria. The market's incredibly healthy from a leverage perspective. You've got infrastructure that exists that's never existed before. You now have credit markets expanding for capital. Like, we're running around here in the Middle East and we're talking to, you know, oil rich countries that have tons of wealth that are exploring and looking into this stuff. FOMO is intensifying. And I think we are getting very close to a lot of noise within this marketplace, especially if interest rates come down and money returns to kind of risk on assets.
Let's go. I mean, I agree with you, by the way. I think you can almost, after being in Bitcoin for a while, you almost feel when things are getting ready to heat up again.
Yeah.
And I'm getting that feeling.
Bubbling.
I mean, it's not always right, full disclaimer, yeah. but like, I do totally see what you're saying. Is there a world where Bitcoin starts ripping and treasury companies don't perform better?
Maybe. Yes. Some of them may not. It's quite possible that they underperform. It's also quite possible that a lot of them overperform because they're leveraged Bitcoin, yeah. right? So they, like our company, for example, if Bitcoin increases, that gives us more capacity to issue our perpetual preferred equity.
Yeah.
And if we issue more perpetual preferred equity, we're buying more Bitcoin with it. That's an attractive model, mm-hmm. right? If Bitcoin goes up, you know, 10%, we pay out our monthly dividend and we are able to issue more perpetual preferred equity, buy more Bitcoin. It starts to become a very attractive business model. That looks appealing. We've got Amplified Bitcoin and we've got digital credit. We've mm-hmm. got two products.
And so do you already have a preferred out there in the market?
Yes, we do. Yeah.
And
SATA.
And mm-hmm. what are the terms on that?
Yeah. So SATA is 12% on par. Mm-hmm. So it pays $12 per share. Currently, it pays $12 per share. It's a variable rate, interest perpetual preferred, very similar to Stretch.
Mm-hmm.
So we have the ability to adjust the interest rate up and down depending on how it's trading. We want it to be within a target range between $95 and $105. So it's got a little bit of a wider band than Strategy's Stretch product, which from a mathematical standpoint stretches out the duration a little bit further. But we want this to be a more stable version. Well, it will likely be a little bit less stable than Stretch, so a little bit more volatile than Stretch, but still providing a significantly high yield relative to everything else that's out in the market.
Yeah.
So our company, how we manage this, well, one of the biggest questions is how do you pay the dividends, right? And we pay the dividends by managing the risk on our balance sheet.
Okay, so that's something I do want to get into.
Yeah, let's talk about it.
But quickly before we do that, you went for 12%, presumably just to be higher than Strategy because otherwise you're not going to be able to compete with them.
Well, we're much smaller. So mm-hmm. we've got a different risk profile. The other thing that's unique about our product and our structure of the design, we do not have any convertible debt on our balance sheet.
Mm-hmm.
So this product is senior on our balance sheet. So we've got the perpetual preferred equity and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a unique capital structure compared to Strategy. Now we can also take... We can be a little bit more flexible with the design of that product.
What if you could lower your tax bill and stack Bitcoin at the same time? Well, by mining Bitcoin with Blockware, you can. New tax guidelines from the Big Beautiful Bill allow American miners to write off 100% of the cost of their mining hardware in a single tax year. That's right, 100% write-off. So if you have $100,000 in capital gains or income, you can purchase $100,000 of miners and offset it entirely. Blockware's mining as a service enables you to start mining Bitcoin right now without lifting a finger. Blockware handles everything from securing the miners to sourcing low-cost power to configuring the pool. They do it all. You get to stack Bitcoin at a discount every single day while also saving big come tax season. Get started today by going to mining.blockwaresolutions.com/WBD. Of course, none of this is tax advice. Speak to your accountant or tax advisor to understand how these rules apply to you. And then head over to mining.blockwaresolutions.com/WBD and you'll get 1 week of free hosting and electricity with each hosted miner purchased. Do you wish you could access cash without selling your Bitcoin? Well, Ledger makes that possible. They're the global leader in Bitcoin-backed lending, and since 2018, they've issued over $9 billion in loans with a perfect record of protecting client assets. With Ledger, you get full custody loans with no credit checks or monthly repayments, just easy access to dollars without selling a single sat. As of July 1st, Ledger is Bitcoin only, meaning they exclusively offer Bitcoin-backed loans with all collateral held by Ledger directly or their funding partners. Your Bitcoin is never lent out to generate interest. I recently took out a loan with Ledger. The whole process was super easy. The application took me less than 15 minutes, and in a few hours, I had the dollars in my account. It was really smooth. So if you need cash, but you don't want to sell Bitcoin, head over to ledger.io/WBD, and you'll get 0.25% off your first loan. That's ledger.io/WBD. If you already self-custody your Bitcoin, you know the deal with hardware wallets. Complex setups, clumsy interfaces, and a seed phrase that can be lost, stolen, or forgotten. Well, BitKey fixes that. BitKey is a multi-sig hardware wallet built by the team behind Square and Cash App. It packs a cryptographic recovery system and built-in inheritance feature into an intuitive, easy-to-use wallet with no seed phrase to sweat over. It's simple, secure self-custody without the stress. And Time named BitKey one of the best inventions of 2024. Get 20% off at bitkey.world when you use the code WBD. That's bitkey.world and use the code WBD. Yeah, because preferreds are like, they're the most interesting thing that's happened in the treasury space this year, I think.
Yeah.
And I had Fong on the show recently. I don't know if you listened to that one, but
I did. Yeah, it was great. Yeah, great show.
And that was the question that I had for him is like, if you have this interest payment that you have to pay out every year, I don't know how high yours is. I think Strategy is around 750 million.
Yeah.
In a scenario where that where your shares price is trading at less than 1x MNAV, how do you pay that back? Because you can't really dilute shareholders at that point. So you either issue more preferreds or you sell Bitcoin.
Yeah.
And like, what if the demand for the preferreds isn't there?
Yeah, there's a few different things. You can also enter the derivatives market for Bitcoin. You've got Bitcoin in your balance sheet, you can enter the derivatives market.
What does that mean? Like, what do you do?
So there's multiple things that you can do. So there's, you could sell covered calls. That's the, you know, clear one that, you know, most people can wrap their heads around. But there's also the futures trade. You can earn yield through that environment. There's also other yield producing, ways that you can use your Bitcoin as collateral for, you know, just little tiny pieces of yield to help pay those dividends. And then you also have operating business. Mm-hmm. So operating business, any cash flow that comes in the door, you can use that to pay dividends as well. But also another thing that is unique to us, and it's cool seeing Strategy follow behind us here, is we came out to market with 12 months of cash to pay our dividends. So we had a 12-month cash reserve.
Oh, that's quite cool.
So we actually led Strategy in that. And then just this last week, or, you know, they come out with a $1.44 billion cash reserve to pay, you know, 18 months worth of dividends into the future to kind of mute this concern of how do you pay the dividends. So it's like, what, and you can also sell a common stock ATM. But again, if your common stock ATM is below one, you would tap these other pools of capital that you could kind of think of it as a line of defense. It's like first line of defense. So like, I've got the cash. Okay, I've got the cash reserve. And then I've got, meanwhile, if I have to dip into this cash reserve because my stock's trading under one MNAV, I'm also going to go explore these other options to rebuild and fill back up that cash reserve. And if the stock recovers at that point in time, then I can, you know, start, you know, dipping back into that.
Is there a, like, so it would almost be a great problem to have, but is there a potential problem, especially as like a younger treasury company, that the preferred is so popular and the common share price doesn't raise enough that you can like tap the ATM, that your interest payments get so large that you kind of get forced to sell Bitcoin.
Well, we can control that. We control how much preferred we have outstanding. So we're constantly monitoring our leverage, right? Right now, we're about 30% amplified. Mm-hmm. So our notional outstanding is about 30% of our Bitcoin balance sheet. So our annual interest payment is $24 million. We have got $200 million outstanding at 12% interest rate. So that's $24 million. If you look at the interest, if you were to break down the interest payable by day in the trading days throughout the year, our daily interest payable is about $100,000, if you were to break it down daily.
Mm-hmm.
Lately, our stock has been trading between $50 and $100 million a day.
Hmm.
So if I just need to raise $100,000 on our stock's trading, it's not much, right? Yeah. Like it's I could go issue $100,000 of stock a day, and like that's an interesting way to look at it.
Yeah.
So that's we're constantly you brought up the champagne problem, right? You've got so much interest in the perpetual preferred equity that you can't sell enough of it, or the price gaps up, right? Mm-hmm. Right now it's trading at $91, and you know, if it goes above our estimated trading range, we can issue more of it to bring it back down to 100.
Yeah.
Which we would absolutely do. But to the extent that we got too amplified, we would look at, you know, can we issue more equity to bolster our balance sheet to reduce the amplification, or can we look at taking on a tail hedge? Can we purchase a tail hedge where we can pull off downside risk mm-hmm. on the balance sheet? So you've got a few things. You've got tools that you can use to manage that circumstance.
Yeah, because when I asked Fong that question, he said like he wasn't shy about saying there is a scenario where they may have to sell Bitcoin. They don't want to. It might be that they're
it's absolute, possible.
And I get he's got a fiduciary duty. Like he has to say that.
Yeah.
But do you think there's like obviously selling Bitcoin as a treasury company is a strange signal to the market, I think. But do you think that changes over time and it becomes a more commonplace thing?
Yeah. It's capital.
Mm-hmm.
It's the most liquid capital on the planet. Like imagine if you're over leveraged and you got a real estate portfolio. You're screwed.
Yeah.
Right. Like, oh, let me go liquidate the stadium real quick. It's, you know, right. It's like not going to happen.
3 years later, you might get rid of it.
Yeah. But you could go sell, like I said, our annual interest obligation is $24 million.
Yeah.
Bitcoin trades $60 billion a day.
Mm-hmm.
Like if I needed to sell, $2 million of Bitcoin, I could do the Bitcoin price isn't going to move
not at all.
A penny.
Yeah.
And it would clear, like that would clear the market. So it's a tool. And when you start to run the mathematics on the perpetual preferred equity, if you take a very conservative view of the math, and let's just assume that you sold Bitcoin to pay the interest obligations, the model still works.
Mm-hmm.
So let me pose a question to you. I think this is fun. If I gave you a Bitcoin today, would you be willing to pay me $10,000 in fiat for the rest of your life? $10,000 a year in fiat for the rest of your life?
Yes.
That's effectively what we're doing with the perpetual preferred.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was trying
to figure out what the interest rate on that is and if it's the best decision. But
let's just make it $12,000 a year.
Yeah.
Okay, so if I gave you $100,000 and you bought Bitcoin with it today, and you had to pay me $12,000 a year for the rest of your life, would you take that risk? It's an interesting way to think about it, right? Like you've got a fiat liability that you got to pay into perpetuity, and if we entered that transaction, you'd figure it out.
This transaction.
you'd figure it out.
Yeah.
Even if the price of Bitcoin went down, you would, you know, do more podcasts and make more money, and you figure it out. You'd pay me cash maybe next year, and instead maybe you sell a little of the Bitcoin, but because you're like, I didn't make enough cash, right? You'd go through the process and you'd figure it out. So that's effectively what we're doing on a larger scale. Anytime we issue perpetual preferred equity, somebody's giving us cash. and we're plowing it into Bitcoin, and we are, our company is taking on the risk of how we pay on the dividends. So one big criticism that comes out a lot, that mainly in like traditional financial media, is Bitcoin's not a yield-bearing asset. Mm-hmm. And
which is not.
It's not, but neither is real estate.
Yeah.
That's a big statement that a lot of people disagree with. And you look at real estate by itself.
A house isn't yield-bearing.
The house isn't yield-bearing.
The house doesn't create more little mini houses next to it.
You have to take risk. Mm-hmm. You have to put work into it. Okay. Bitcoin is not yield-bearing. You have to take risk. You got to put work into it.
Yeah.
And that's the big distinction, is that our company is risk-taking. Right, like we are risk taking to buy more Bitcoin. We are taking on that risk of paying that dividend into perpetuity.
So apart from the preferreds, which you're offering a similar product to Stretch, which I actually think is the most interesting of Stretch's products anyway.
It's really appealing. Yeah,
and you're issuing a slightly higher interest rate, mm-hmm. understandably, like otherwise you just won't compete with Strategy.
Yeah.
How else are you trying to differentiate yourself?
Yeah. Well, I think one thing that's a big differentiator for us is that, you know, we are a bit smaller, and we offer a different risk return metric. There's going to be hundreds. Let me put this into perspective. So when we went out to market with SATA, we had just came off of a 30%. This is right after October 10th, the big like liquidation event. And we went out to market like right after that.
Bad timing.
Bad timing. Probably is like some of the worst timing you probably could have had. And we came out with this product, and you're going to pay 12% interest. And still at this point, Strategy hasn't raised any cash. And we went to the market and we were saying, hey, we're going to have a cash reserve. Our business is an asset management company. Everybody that works at the company are finance people. We're going to operate in the financial markets. We're going to explore yield opportunities. We're going to find ways to generate Bitcoin yield that are maybe a little bit more niche than what Strategy may do. For example, like the M&A.
Yeah,
which was part of our original value proposition. And we went to the market, and initially we were going to market to raise $125 million. We upsized the deal up to $200 million because there was significant demand. And at the $200 million at a price of $80, we actually had nearly $500 million of demand. Hmm. So we could have issued even more than that. So there was significant demand from that perspective. And we think this marketplace is going to expand drastically, especially as we start making inroads within the rating agencies. As the rating agencies start to wrap their heads around Bitcoin and digital credit, then we can start having real conversations with, you know, some of my old colleagues in the insurance and reinsurance world about adding these instruments to their balance sheet to protect against, you know, debasement and long tail liabilities that they're not doing a great job managing right now.
Yeah. We've not had enough time here, Jeff. Like, we've only got a few
more
minutes.
We'll do a fourth one down the road.
But I do have a question for you before you go. So Strategy obviously have their like Bitcoin projections, where they think Bitcoin will go. Like, they have a bull bear case. Mm-hmm. How do you think about Bitcoin right now? Because I know you are a Bitcoiner, but you've mm-hmm. been very heavily in the treasury world for the last year and a bit.
Yep.
Like, what do you kind of project out for Bitcoin?
Short term or long, short term, long term,
whatever both, you're thinking both. About.
Yeah, we view that over the next, we're in a digital gold rush. Over the next 4 to 8 years, we think institutional adoption increases drastically. We think sovereign adoption increases drastically. We think digital credit starts to permeate throughout the rest of the market, and because of that, those dynamics, you've got even the Bitcoin ETF being the most successful ETF in history. Those dynamics are, that success is going to breed more success, and it already has. So because of those dynamics, the macro environment, we see probably the next 4 to 8 years between a 30 to 50% compound annual growth rate for Bitcoin. And we think that will start to taper off as economies of scale and large economies of scale start to come into play. Once Bitcoin's at a $10 trillion asset, it's probably going to be significantly less volatile. And the compound annual growth rate will be reducing over time into the future.
But you think we get 30 to 50% over the next decade?
Yeah.
I'll take it.
Yeah.
I'll take that.
Right. I mean, you look at the last 7 years, and it's been like 70% compound annual growth rate. Even what in 2022 is at 16,000, and what we're at 90,000 right now. What is that? That's
A lot.
A lot. Like, annualize that. That's 70-80% probably. And I don't think it takes a lot of capital to move it much higher.
So one of the interesting things in the treasury world is that, like, when Strategy came out, started this whole genre, it took quite a long time for other companies to do the same thing, which always surprised me. Like, when Saylor first came out and started doing his thing, I thought there was going to be essentially like a gold rush of corporations trying to own Bitcoin. And it wasn't really until 12 months ago, maybe 18 months ago, that really kicked off. Mm-hmm. If you were to look out another 4 years, how do you think these business models will have evolved? And what kind of market will they be fulfilling then?
Yeah. The market will evolve significantly. I think there will be another doubling of the number of companies that hold Bitcoin on the balance sheet, and then it'll double again, right? I think that will happen. There are millions of companies out in the world. I think small, medium enterprises will start to adopt Bitcoin as well, out of necessity. And I think digital credit is a multi-trillion dollar idea, and that will probably take off like a wildfire. And it will likely get to a point where some of these larger capital institutions will have no other option but to own it. You compare it to some of the other debt in the market, and these products are so much better on a risk return basis that banks and pensions and insurance companies will not be able to not hold these things, especially if they get rated appropriately. And so yeah, I think we've got a lot of excitement on the horizon, and the yield generating opportunities are going to expand as well. If you think about if the price of Bitcoin goes from 100,000 to 500,000, the number of people that are interested in taking out a Bitcoin backed loan is going to 5x.
Yeah, yeah, that's not just going to double.
That's not going to double. It's going to 5x, yeah. Right? And that if that happens, that provides more opportunity for these other type of, yield environments or credit environments where the infrastructure can support itself, as long as the risk is managed appropriately, which I think is incredibly important. And we now have institutional actors that are operating the traditional financial markets with risk backgrounds that view their responsibility as very large, right? So Saylor and the Strategy team and our team at Strive, we have a really big responsibility here, and we are laser-like focused on making sure that we manage our liabilities into perpetuity. Every part of the company is aligned for that, and we want to be the second largest issuer of digital credit on the planet.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I'm sorry we had to speed run this one so quickly.
All right.
We've been really tight on time, but I love talking to you, Jeff. We definitely should do it again.
Appreciate it.
Thanks
for the time. Yeah.